Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit amfam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Welcome to Panel to Screen. I'm Bo.
And I'm Bell.
Bell, man, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. You know, it's I don't. I got nothing.
You got nothing. Oh my goodness. Bell's got nothing. Well, he's gonna get something. You better get it together, buddy. We got a movie here to talk about that we should have been talking about weeks ago, but somebody had his busy life, taking care of people and going on vacations and whatnot. But it took you a while, ladies and gentlemen. I want to go ahead and just call Bell out. It took him a while to see Thor: Love and Thunder, but he's not alone. I have talked to a lot of different folks who this one, for whatever reason, has not been like a priority to go see as soon as it comes out, which I find interesting. And we'll talk more about that. Before we do, got a couple things we want to let you know. First of all, thank you so much to everybody who is listening. Just by listening to this show, you are doing the good work of supporting it with your ears. So thank you, your ears, for supporting this show. Hey, if you'd like to support this show beyond just the ears and keep it on the air, well, there's a way to do it. It's over at patreon.com/TV Talk. Now, here's the thing. This episode that is going out today is the last of kind of like the era of our TV Talk Patreon, which was by content. All right. So this is a little housekeeping, but I want to go ahead and get this out of the way so that people know this is coming. Historically, what we've done with our wonderful patrons who help make this show happen is that every single time we put out a full episode of the podcast is when their support would hit us and allow for us to continue doing this. Well, things have been different, as you have well noticed. For one thing, some weeks we have a lot of like more than just the podcast. Some weeks we have a lot of mini podcasts that come your way, especially when, you know, we've got an influx of Star Wars and Disney and, you know, Marvel and DC. Like there's just a lot. We got HBO stuff. You know, who knows? We might have some Paramount stuff. We might talk some Star Trek TV talk. There's like all kinds of TV talk available, especially through the minis. So we want to increase the amount of content. And so in order to do that and have it make sense, we're going to be shifting to a monthly support system. So what does that mean for those of you who are already patrons? I want to tell you, but to be honest, I don't know. I have no earthly idea. So you'll be on the lookout on your emails because it'll have all the information on what that means going forward, because I've never switched an account like this from a per content to a monthly. So this will be an interesting experience for all of us. Think of this as a journey, okay? Think of it as a journey that we're all about to go on as we try to figure out what does support for TV Talk in the future look like. And we want to thank all of you who have been supporting us thus far. And if you want to learn more how you can support the show, head over to patreon.com/TV Talk. Over the next week or so, it might be very different. So if you want to be part of that weird change that's about to happen, you can support us, even though it'll be weird. But do it. Won't you? Okay, I think that's it. I think that's all I got.
Yes.
that's the best I could do with what I know for now. But, you know, we're professional podcasters. We don't just do things on the fly, okay? This is all planned. This is all strategery, okay? We've got
years in advance.
This was our plan all along, was to do this, exactly this, in exactly this way. So even if it sounds confusing and like we don't know what we're doing.
See, it's all an act. We act this way.
Yes.
It's all part of our plan.
Yeah.
It's all part of our production. It's characters that we're playing.
Yes.
We're professionals, but exactly. We play unprofessional characters.
Yes. Yes. Exactly, Bell. That is what he said. is exactly correct. All right, man, we got some great characters to talk about on this this episode here. You ready to get into it?
Let's do it.
All right, first of all, we got to let them know this is going to be a spoilerific review. We will be spoiling this movie from front to back and everything in between. So spoilers, 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 spoilers.
Spoilers.
Here there be spoilers, and ye been warned. Okay, Belle. As I mentioned, a lot of people have, for whatever reason, not been putting this on their high priority list of Marvel properties or just movies in general to watch. Now, people, of course, are watching this movie, and you know, I think the box office has not been the best, but it also hasn't been the worst. It's doing okay. So there is kind of this question as to why this wasn't top of mind for a lot of people. I can't relate with that. This was one that I was very much looking forward to. I was very excited to see, you know, a return of Taika behind the Thor helm, and even just the concept of getting something beyond the original kind of Marvel trilogy leading up to Infinity War, finding out where these characters are and where they go after the endgame, I think was a fun premise. And, you know, with some of the storylines they're playing around with Jane becoming the new Thor, and, you know, just the promise or at least a tease of what Asgardians of the galaxy might look like. I was all in. I was excited, and I wanted to see this the day it came out. I believe I even saw it on Thursday, which I don't typically do.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was amongst the first to view this one. Now, I say that to say that's where my head was at going in. This one took you a while to get to the theater. So I kind of want to know, what is, before seeing this movie, where was your head at with Thor, with this movie, and maybe even like put it on you a little bit and be like, is there, other than just like family reasons, is there any particular reason why this one didn't necessarily meet the must see on day one category for you?
No, see, I was super excited. Wanted to watch the movie on release. Couldn't actually make that happen because we can't do Thursday releases just because of Christie's work schedule. Mm. And that particular weekend, we couldn't get tickets. And so then we had, you know, stuff popping up on other weekends. Then we went out of town. And so basically, yeah, it was a situation we both wanted to see it, but I couldn't secure tickets the opening weekend. I think I just waited too late, and there just wasn't anything like any time spots or tickets that were available that were gonna, you know, suit our needs for that weekend. And so we couldn't watch it. And like, finally we were like, okay, we have a weekend. Do you want to go see it on Friday? And so we were like, yeah, let's go do it. So we finally got to see it. So I was excited about it. Like, I like Taika. You know, I thought Ragnarok was excellent, and so I was really excited to see what, you know, his second film was going to be like in the series of, like, I guess the Taika Thor series. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, you know, I was really looking forward to it. And yeah, it was just an unfortunate chain of events that caused us to not be able to see it until we did. It wasn't like I was just not interested. And I know, yeah, like you're right. There are people who are kind of like, eh, yeah, whatever. And maybe that's fatigue. You know, it could be a number of things, but it certainly wasn't the case for me. It was just circumstances as to why I couldn't see it when I wanted to. But yeah, with so many Marvel properties coming out and all that stuff, maybe it's just people are just kind of like getting Marvel fatigue, getting superhero movie fatigue. I don't know.
You know, Marvel fatigue or I don't know if it's superhero fatigue, because I do think you look at, like, you know, the success of something like The Boys, which is doing extremely well. Like, you know, there's a lot of superhero material that is out there. So but I do think Marvel fatigue might play into it. I think that's definitely the case. But regardless, okay, this is helpful though. I was very curious to kind of know where your head was at, and I think this kind of helps to put that into some perspective here. All right, man, where to begin? Jane as Thor. This is a major kind of change that happened in the comic books relatively recently. The concept of giving Jane Foster cancer, and, you know, the way in which the hammer plays into, you know, not necessarily healing her, but giving her strength while also stopping the chemo. And thus, it was a very deep story. It kind of gave an opportunity to tell the kind of, you know, just kind of, I guess, heavier stories while also dealing with some pretty, I mean, just intense subject matter. You know what I mean? Like, cancer is no laughing matter. And perhaps that statement in and of itself is why I think a lot of people have not been resonating with this movie as much as perhaps they wanted to, because this is a pretty funny movie, despite the fact we are dealing with a character called the God Butcherer and, yeah, you know, and a lot of murder all around us and, you know, cancer. And yet it is constantly telling jokes. So comedy wise, man, where did you feel like this movie was for you? Did you enjoy it, or which camp, I guess, are you in?
I did like it. I did enjoy it. I don't think I enjoyed it as much as Ragnarok, but I think that has more to do with the subject matter. And your thought, what you just said there, is exactly what I was thinking, right? So this is like, you look at Ragnarok. Ragnarok's a straight up comedy. Now there are stakes in it and stuff like that, and you know, the everything sort of works with it as far as the story goes, and it's still funny, and it's not just, you know, I guess, yeah, it's just a straight up comedy, right? Like there's action in it and stuff, but you know, Ragnarok was more of a comedy. And the setting and everything in there worked for it. And then this one, you know, Taika's really gifted at that comedy kind of stuff. I think Hemsworth as a comedic Thor is awesome. It's the best interpretation of Thor. I think, you know, when they made that decision in Ragnarok, it worked. And it's like when you have a story that revolves around Jane getting cancer and a guy called Gore the God Butcher. In my head, I was kind of like, okay, this is going to be really, really interesting on how they're going to match the tones and make the tonal changes between the serious stuff and the comedic stuff work. And I feel like it worked overall. It didn't feel like there were tonal shifts every like 5 seconds. You know, where it was like, here's funny stuff, now here's serious stuff, here's funny stuff, here's serious stuff. The way they kind of toned the comedy down a little bit when they're in the more serious kind of things, but still kind of kept it a little light. I think that, yeah, I think it worked overall. I mean, the only way to make it work better is probably not to deal with those storylines or change it so that it's not like a, you know, Jane getting cancer or something. But I don't know how you do that. I don't know how you do that. But I think overall, I think it worked. I think the comedy parts were great. I think the more serious parts blended okay. They weren't as jarring as I was kind of expecting them to be going in. So yeah, I feel like it worked. I enjoyed it. I thought it was funny. That was where I'm sitting.
I'm right there with you. I very much enjoyed the movie. I enjoyed the comedy. I didn't think that it was like too funny. And you know, the criticism that I've seen about the whole, you know, subject matter shouldn't be this funny, and comparing it to something like Ragnarok, the reality is like, Ragnarok, you had like genocide in Ragnarok. You know what I mean? Like that, you had like an entire planet wiped out. In Ragnarok, this was like, you know, you had an entire people group turned into refugees. These are not laughing matters either. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
like there was a lot of both, you know, heavy action and heavy tragedy throughout Ragnarok. And I will be the first to admit that, you know, even Ragnarok, you know, failed in having kind of like some of the more somber moments, you know, cut with a joke, which, you know, is unfortunate. I think the biggest one is Korg, when, you know, he was talking about like, you know, oh, we can rebuild it. It'll be a place for all people to, no, man, sorry, it's pretty much gone. Like, I thought that,
yeah,
that was a little bit of an unfortunate, like, we actually don't need a joke right here. I think this would have actually worked stronger if it had just landed as kind of the tragedy that it was. So Ragnarok, while I agree, I enjoyed Ragnarok more, but I also look at Ragnarok as one of my favorite of the MCU. So
yeah,
it's hard to compare this against that, but I understand why we're doing it, because obviously this is Taika. This is, you know, his return to Thor, and we're seeing kind of a continuation of this approach to Thor. So the comedy I don't have a problem with. I liked the exploration of what New Asgard is, especially in kind of a post-Endgame world. You know, it's kind of become almost like a theme park to some extent. Tourism is huge, and it makes sense. This is filled with these, you know, godlike, heroic, are super people. We don't necessarily know whether or not the Asgardians all have powers, but it does seem that perhaps at the very least, they're all stronger than, you know, mortal humans, you know, mere mortal humans. And on top of that, as we also saw, Korg, despite the joke, was right that New Asgard did become a haven for people groups from across the cosmos. And so we've got not just Asgardians living there, we've got aliens living there, and all of kind of this, you know, different kind of cultures coming together, which make for a really interesting location to be added to the MCU as a whole. We also see, yeah, Valkyrie, you know, as King of Asgard. She's bored, but at the same time, like, has done, it's kind of like she's bored by success. She's done a very good job of, you know, kind of establishing a life for her people, and then also establishing a really thriving, you know, global economy and kind of the global, you know, Earth setting of the MCU. And so, you know, throughout all of that, she's like, I mean, I used to be kind of like a, you know, a never sober bounty hunter. I used to just kind of be drinking and killing all the time. And, you know, now I got to pose for ads. So I don't know. I really dug the kind of the establishment of New Asgard, and in terms of the character of Valkyrie though, so I want to talk about her. Great character, loved her in Ragnarok, and it's not that I didn't like her here. I very much did, but I kind of felt like this movie. All right.
Here it comes.
Well, no, I enjoyed
it. Hold on to your butts.
No, I did. I enjoyed the movie very, very much. But I do find
But like I said, hold on to your butts. And you're like, I really enjoyed the movie, but. And that was a reference to you. Yeah, sorry.
Okay, so all right, this is really what it comes down to, okay? These movies right now, Phase 4 of the MCU, has all been about the fallout from Endgame and kind of a where are they now? And this movie in particular feels very much like an epilogue to Thor. Like, that's kind of what this felt like. I don't think that we ended with, like, oh, there's going to be a Thor 5 or anything like that. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think we might see Thor pop up in perhaps future Avengers films or something of that nature. But I don't think we're going to just, you know, we're not going to have, like, this mass continuation of the franchise. I just doubt that that's the case.
There's going to be a Thor 5, bro.
I don't think there will be. But I do think this gave an opportunity to do a lot of things like give Jane a proper send-off, which we never really had. And that was really good. This gave an opportunity to kind of bring Thor back to kind of center, right? Like have kind of a wrap-up conclusion to his character that kind of brings him closer to who we knew him to be. And so he's not kind of in this, you know, depressed, obese stupor that we saw him at the end of Endgame. And so I think this movie did a lot of good work at kind of bringing things back to home. Whereas a lot of other properties, though, that we've seen thus far are really about establishing new characters and kind of setting up legacy, you know, new legacy characters. And so, for example, Hawkeye introduced us to Kate Bishop as the new Hawkeye. And, you know, that's an exciting prospect to see where her character goes and being set up from, you know, being kind of this side character to being kind of a main character. Obviously, Shang-Chi is a brand new character in a brand new franchise. The Eternals, we don't know what's going on there, but regardless, you know, we got Miss Marvel. You know, so my point is that we're in this era of dealing with the fallout of Endgame and setting up new characters. I thought, this is where my butt comes in, Bell. I thought that Thor, Love and Thunder, I suspected at the end of it that Jane would probably die. I did think that that was probably going to be the case. So I was not looking to this movie, especially given the fact that we were introduced to Thor as, or Jane as Thor, like as kind of like a fully formed Thor, as opposed to kind of go throughout that origin story process where we end the movie with her as Thor. I was like, okay, well, if she's already here, then that means that this is going to be where she kicks it at the end of this one, which makes sense. I mean, it makes sense for the story with the character, obviously. But then beyond that, I think it also makes sense with Natalie Portman really wanting to, you know, be done with this franchise, but also end on kind of her own terms, so to speak.
Yeah.
Brava. I thought that was really well done. But Valkyrie, man, I thought that this was going to really kind of establish Valkyrie as kind of that Avengers level character. And I feel like she was less of a supporting character in this movie than she was in the first movie. Like, in the first movie, she had, like, an arc and, like, you know, kind of went on a journey and was awesome and everything. But, like, we saw kind of an evolution of the character. Here, she's just kind of bored. And, you know, she's just kind of like, hey, y'all want to go and, like, you know, kill some stuff? And even, like, when the children are kidnapped, she's like, oh, yeah, let's, I'm down for a fight. Not really, like, freaking out about the fact that children were just kidnapped. Just, like, literally like, I got nothing to do. You know, I don't know. I just,
yeah,
I was expecting that they were going to take Valkyrie and kind of set her up as that new Thor level character with kind of like these godlike abilities and being kind of a big powerhouse. And that's clearly not where they're taking the character, which is fine. But that's my butt. If there's going to be a butt here, Bell.
Yeah, no, I kind of agree with you, right? At the end of Ragnarok, you know, it seems like, you know, we're setting this up. You know, Thor's going to go off with himself and or rather with the Guardians and go do stuff there. And then Valkyrie's going to step up to lead Asgard. And so the idea that I had is that, you know, we would see her in more of a commanding role. And she is. I mean, she is king of Asgard. But yeah, she seems so nonchalant about it. Like, well, yeah, she doesn't
commanding want it. In a diplomatic way, not like in like a.
Right, right. Yeah. In like a warrior kind of way. Right. And so like I kind of figured that by the end of it, the same kind of thing, like she's like, I am not a diplomat. Like, this is not who I am.
This job sucks. She got totally like tricked, like, oh, I'm going to change things. It's going to be awesome. And then like, she does like, this sucks. sucks.
She's like, you can't deal with politics. Like, this is ridiculous. And so you know, maybe like this adventure that she has with Thor to defeat the God Butcher was going to kind of, you know, awaken her to that side of her, right? That this is what she's missing, this is what she wants. And then that would be like an avenue for her, you know, maybe, you know, Thor's like, well, you know, I do have some friends in the Avengers, they'll be looking for someone and something like that. And then so yeah, that leads for her to be maybe like Thor's replacement if we're going to get new Avengers. But like now it looks like, you know, Thor's going to be gallivanting around with Love, and Valkyrie's just going to be miserable being a diplomat in New Asgard and like making sure that tourists
entertained. Are you not entertained? Like, well, that was the thing. Like, where is she like at the end of this movie? Like, where, like, I guess she goes back to her job. Like, I don't know. So that was kind of, I found that to be a little disappointing, but I mean, like, not necessary. This is not the Valkyrie movie. I get that. It's the Love and Thunder. So it was about Love and Thunder, which I thought was kind of a neat little twist. What was your thoughts about, you know, let's talk about Gore. Obviously, this is a character that a lot of people have been looking forward to seeing. And, you know, there's, I think some of the criticism that I've seen about Gore the God Butcher is for a guy named Gore the God Butcher. We could probably see a little bit more butchering of gods than we got in this movie. In fact, you know, Thor did more god butchering in this movie on screen than Gore did. So
no, they did the same amount.
Did they?
Yeah, because Gore killed that weird sun god dude at the very beginning. Like, he cuts his head off, right?
Yep.
And then Thor kills Zeus, or quote, puts kills in quote marks. So technically, Gore did more god butchering.
Okay, but like
on screen,
of course. But like, okay, so yeah. But this is the thing, though. We saw Thor like fighting all of those other people at the God City, and like when he was slicing up, they all had like gold blood, which was kind of a cool concept.
Those weren't gods; those were like guards or whatever.
But they bled gold.
Yeah, but like those could very well be like constructs by the gods or something like that. I did not. There would not be a god who would be, yeah, sure, I'll be a guard for the rest of the god. No, these are gods we're talking about.
Well, they could be gods of guarding. You don't know. You like that? I am the god of guarding doors. I'm the god of standing right there.
I am the god of this particular circle that we're standing on.
Right.
Exactly. The god of guarding this particular circle. Yeah, no.
That's probably how Zeus recruited them. Like, okay, what do you do? You know, you go to, we need a guy, a janitor guy. And like, I'm not going to do that. I'm a god. Yes, you are the god of janitors. Yeah. And he's like, oh, yes, I am. Yes, I'm the god of janitors. Oh, very good. All right, take out the trash. You know, I can make that up.
Yeah. No, those were most certainly not gods. Those were constructs or something like that. Yeah, every single one of those things with the gold blood, those were just, they were not gods. They were guards of some magical, mystical creation.
All right. Fair enough. But I mean, so, you know, there's been some criticism though, that we only got to see, you know, Gore kind of butcher the one god who, you know, arguably had it coming. And so this concept of kind of establishing Gore as, you know, kind of a hashtag Gore was right type of character seems to kind of go against, to some extent, I think the terror that people wanted to see from him, as opposed to him being more of a character that you could very much empathize with and connect with. Also, the way in which the Necroblade kind of corrupted him, as opposed to him kind of having these kind of machinations on his own. I don't know. I will say Christian Bale looked terrifying and did a fantastic job with what he was given here. And I don't necessarily mind the choice given the way that in which the movie ended. But what is your thoughts overall with Christian Bale as Gore the God Butcher?
I have really very little familiarity with the comic version of him, but I really liked Bale's performance. And, you know, thinking about the tonal stuff we were talking about earlier, where this is mainly a comedy movie and you would have to like intersplice scenes of in the earlier movie where the stuff with Thor is a lot more lighthearted and a lot more funny with scenes of Gore slaughtering gods. Right. And like, you know, I just don't think it would have worked. I'm fine with what they had. Like the scenes with him and the kids are just creepy because he's like this crazy person. And so I was satisfied with what we had. I thought Bale's performance was great. So I don't mind that there wasn't more god killing. Right. We kind of see, you know, some aftermath of the gods that he's killed and stuff like that. But again, like, you know, to establish more of that A, I don't necessarily think was needed because he's called Gore the God Butcher. Okay, you know what he does. He butchers right. gods. It's in the name, right? It's like the slap chop, right? You slap it and it chops. You don't need an explanation. You know.
it's right there in the name. I hear you. Yeah, man.
Yeah. So
that's fine. I mean, like I agree. I think he did I think he was so Bale's performance is really what kind of carried Gore as a terrifying villain. Less about like what he was doing and more about the way in which, like, again, Bale just kind of carried himself. And you're right. Those scenes with the kids were just like nightmare inducing. Yeah. Like just really terrifying.
Yeah. And I think that's the best way to do those kinds of villains. Like, you don't have to show me Gore killing these gods for me to be scared of him. You let Christian Bale be Christian Bale.
Already terrified. Yes.
Yeah. You have him give this creepy performance.
What are you? And you hey, what are you? The God of Lights? The God of Lights? Hey, no, go. Get
you
out
want
of
me
my
to
face.
Smash your lights?
You want me to smash your lights? I'm about to be the God of smashing lights. Are you the God of Lights? The God of
look,
Lights.
Look, we're done. We're done professionally.
Come
You're
here,
a good
here.
God, but we're done professionally. Well, you are trashing my scene.
That's great. No, that's it. Let Christian Bale be Christian Bale. He did a fantastic job. He really did.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, like we immediately know his motivation, right? Because the whole scene, like his planet's destroyed, you know, his daughter dies and the god just does not care.
Right.
And so you're like, okay, wow, you know, he was faithful all the way up until the end. And kills the god because of it. And like you see that, like, you know, that rage and whatnot that he felt for his god not protecting him and his daughter. The Necrosword took advantage of that. And like, you know, we have this the classic trope of maybe not trope, but like the classic theme of like, you know, revenge isn't going to bring your dead loved one back.
Right.
And
you
were literally at the only place in the universe that can do that. And do you want to choose hate and revenge, or do you want to choose love? You know, and like that's kind of, you know, like it sort of sets up everything, right? And so that was Bale's performance was great. Like, yeah, I thought it worked really well. I know some people were complaining as well, he didn't look like he does in the comics, but like, come on.
I thought he looked great. I mean, no, yeah, he didn't have the tails.
I thought he looked good too.
Nose, but I thought he was fantastic. I have no problem with the visual changes they made.
Yeah, because, I mean, again, like, you know, most movie-going audiences aren't going to know what Gore the God Butcher looks like from the comics.
Right.
Really, the you know, I looked at it beforehand, and Alamo does these things where, like, they...
I love
Austin
Alamo
Books and
things.
Comics. Yeah. Yeah, Austin Books and Comics is a local comic shop here in town, and they've been doing, like, for all the Marvel movies, you know, the history of the comics, the history of the character, and where this movie... where the storylines of that come from. And so they talk about, you know, the story arc of Gore the God Butcher. They talk about the story arc of Jane being Mighty Thor without like spoiling anything, right? Like they talk about the overall, you know, ideas and themes, but they don't really go into any of the spoilery kind of things from the comics that might appear in the movie because they really don't know. But yeah. And so like, you know, they're showing people pictures of Gore the God Butcher on those little preview things. And I'll bet that's, for 90% of the 95-96% of the audience, their first look at what Gore the God Butcher looks like in the comics. And so, yeah,
possibly their only look, honestly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, those kinds of complaints. And I saw some people complaining about Thor's like gold and blue and red costume. I was like, you know, it looks
awesome.
Kirby-ish.
Yeah.
Yes. It's like, it's like Jack Kirby, like, Thor, and like I thought that was wonderful, and some people are complaining about that, but yeah, like the whole, you know, it doesn't look exactly like it looks in the comics. Of course it doesn't. It's not going to. Stop having this expectation going into these movies.
Yeah, it's been over 10 years now. Come on, guys.
Yes. Yes, it's the MCU. New, yeah, they might draw inspiration from the comics, but it's not going to look like the comics. This is no longer a comic universe. This is the MCU, and anything that happened in the comics, while it might have some sort of impact on the story, it is not going to be exactly how it is there. So,
well, and I got it, yeah. But I will say this, it is fun when things are comic accurate, and for example, like Jane's suit in particular, like, looks just straight out the pages. And there's a lot of like panels that came to life in this movie overall, and so like to nitpick at that level is just kind of crazy to me. But I tell you what, man, I want to talk about what this movie does and kind of where it's playing around with in terms of the grander I guess the grander lore of the MCU, but we're gonna do that after we take a quick break. We'll be right back. More great TV talk up in just a few minutes, but first, we got to pay a few bills. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
All right, man. So we, you know, we talked about, we kind of joked a little bit about the kind of the city of the gods and everything. And, you know, it, this movie, and not just this movie, but like this phase of the MCU has really been playing around with the celestial nature of the MCU. We've been dealing with, you know, even though the TVA is not necessarily a, well, I mean, arguably the you could argue actually that the TVA is kind of set up like Scientology to some extent, like a cult, you know?
Yeah.
And so you've got, you know, you've got that aspect of things, and we're kind of introduced to, you know, these false gods through that. And then ultimately through, you know, our first introduction to He Who Remains, which we know now is going to play a massive role in the future. And then of course in Moon Knight, we've been dealing with the pantheon of Egyptian gods. Thor, we of course been dealing with the Norse gods and Norse mythology and that sort of thing. And then here we're introduced to Zeus and kind of the Greek gods. We also get the setup of Hercules, which I think some people misinterpreted to mean that Hercules was going to be in the next Thor movie. That's not the case, y'all. He's going to probably get it's probably for a Disney Plus spinoff at some point, is where he'll probably play in. But I don't think he's going to be like the villain of the next Thor movie. I don't think we're going to get a next Thor movie. Here's the thing, though. This is something that did rub me a little bit the wrong way. So in the City of the Gods, they have a lot of fun playing around and kind of showcasing different gods from various mythologies. Also, gods that they kind of, you know, established for I forget what Korg's species is, but like the god of the rock people, right? And he's literally sitting, I don't know if you noticed this, he's sitting on a throne of scissors.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I saw that. I was like, is that supposed to be like the Iron Throne, but with scissors?
Yeah, it's a little rock, paper, scissors jokes. You don't have to be afraid of me unless you're made of scissors. Paper,
yeah.
So, yeah. I liked that was kind of like a goofy but funny and also fitting reference there. I liked that. Here's the thing. The gods are presented to us like they're all just kind of cool with Zeus. Like, obviously, they're like, oh, yeah, Zeus is like the dude and everything else. And so, you know, when he's like talking about, you know, human sacrifice and he's talking about, you know, crazy orgies and everything, which is very, very on brand for Zeus. Don't get me wrong. It certainly is. But I don't think that's necessarily on brand for some of the other gods that are represented. For example, we very specifically see Bast in this kind of organization of gods from across the MCU. And it's kind of hard for me to imagine that Bast is going to be like cool with Zeus like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I didn't see Bast.
She was sitting right in front of Jane.
Okay.
And so, like, you know, and again, like, it's not like they showed her, like, yeah, origin, human sacrifice, woohoo, or anything like that. But it is, like, and I get it. Like, the idea was that they were called here for a summit of some sort. But at the same time, I don't know. I feel as though they kind of, and I think that it helps the movie to paint this idea that all gods are cynical and, you know, must be eradicated, right? Because they've stopped caring. If they ever did. And I think the problem with that premise is that we know that across the MCU, that's not the case. That Bast is, you know, to some extent, seems to not have given up on Wakanda. We see that, you know, the Egyptian pantheon is very active, albeit they're kind of connected to humanity in different ways now. And maybe that's the idea, is that, for example, I don't think that the Egyptian pantheon was present at this kind of city because they may have like turned their back on like larger pantheons and gone specifically into, you know, living as humans and getting more connected with humanity through that route. I think there's an aspect of like showcasing Bast here is kind of cool in theory, but in practice seemed it just seemed out of character. I don't know. I feel like I need more lore surrounding like what was this city? Like, what's this all about? And I don't think we're ever going to get it. because it was cool for what it was, but I don't think this is like going to be a thing. I don't know. That's my thoughts on that.
Yeah, like I'm glad I didn't realize that Bost was there. But yeah, I don't think that Bost would go to this.
But she was. She was
like,
there.
Right. Yeah, like I don't know. Headcanon was something that it's reluctant. Yes, we have this problem with the God Butcher, and that Bost's expectation was that there will be something that we will do in order to stop it. And then immediately upon seeing that Zeus had no care or concern about the God Butcher, I would feel that Bost would be like, all right, I'm out.
Yeah, I mean, like, there could be like a stage to walk out or something of that nature. But again, that would have gone against the message of the movie. So I understand why they didn't go that route. I mean, the other thing, too, is you could have also, if you wanted to tie in kind of Wakanda, you know, I guess, you know, mythology, like you could pull from Anuman. You could have Anuman present, who's the god of the Jabari. And so, like, you know, there's just ways you could have like done some different things. And I don't know. So that's my level of gripe is like, this is out of character for this particular, that's like, I think overall I only really had two gripes from that standpoint of like, this is out of character. Or this doesn't necessarily fit the universe. And the other is like, I am so confused about Korg's like species and familial structure, because it's like, okay, like, oh, that's cool. Like his two dads go to that lava lakes of something and hold hands until a baby forms. That's cute. What happened to your mom and her boyfriend who you hate? Like, and what's that situation exactly? So that was confusing to me.
Didn't he say something about that in Ragnarok?
That was the whole joke when you're first introduced to him. He's like, oh, I'm trying to start a revolution. I tried one back home, but nobody showed up except for my mom and her boyfriend, who I hate. And so they're just like, oh, when my dad met my other dad, and I'm like, your dad met your other dad. Well, how was your mom? Oh, she wasn't even involved. Wait, what? So are your people? All right. So I'm just like trying to understand. Yeah.
Internal consistencies. Come on. They're important.
Yeah. So that was one that I was like, I'm so confused. Maybe he was adopted by his mom or something of that nature. I don't know. It just that... It's a small little thing, and I get it. Like, both situations, they're two jokes. Like, when it all comes down to it, it's two jokes. And they're both setting up other jokes with the whole revolution thing in Ragnarok, and with the Dwayne joke in the end of...
yeah, his father, Dwayne.
Yeah. No, he wasn't his father. That was I met a cool dude named Dwayne, and it was Dwayne the Rock, right?
Oh, yeah. Dwayne was his partner that they made the baby with, yeah.
It's weird calling him Dwayne instead of the Rock.
I know, right? I say my biggest complaint with that whole God scene is they never showed Jeff the God of Biscuits.
Oh yeah, you know that is
from Eddie Izzard.
No, I.
Well, for the audience who may not know who Jeff the God of Biscuits is,
not know who Jeff the God of Biscuits is, Bel?
I know Simon the God of Hairdos, or Jeff the God of Biscuits.
What are they teaching in these schools?
They got all these crap gods.
Copy ours from the Romans. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, man. Oh, you've got good gods? Oh, wonderful, wonderful.
We also saw Celestials in this. Okay?
There's Celestials outside the window.
And it's interesting because not only do we see Celestials, but even in the hall where it leads up to Eternity, we see at least one Celestial head, if I'm not mistaken, represented there, right?
It was a statue. Yeah.
Right. So they're playing around. This movie plays around with a lot of things. And again, that's not necessarily a bad thing. I'd actually prefer it as opposed to something like what Eternals did, where they introduced like a lot of high concepts that didn't pay tribute to what came before. But I think the way in which this one engages some of those begs further questions and begs more of like an exploration here.
Well, not only that, another movie has gone by in the MCU where not a single person mentions the giant Celestial head and hand sticking out of the Pacific Ocean.
It never happened, Bell. It didn't happen. I think they're going to have Druid. Did Druid, was he alive at the end of that movie? I can't remember.
Yeah.
The discount Ezra Miller dude?
I don't remember if Druid dies or not.
I think he's still alive. Well, maybe he could just he mind wiped the entire planet. That's they'll okay, explain that it away that way, and it'll be, you know. Or Xavier did, because that's coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
but is it?
Yes. Yes. Is it not?
Yes. I don't know. I mean, he's dead in the only universe where you've seen him.
Yeah, but let's kind of pull back and let's talk about grander MCU stuff here in just a second. But before we do that, Thor: Love and Thunder. It'd be remiss if we didn't at least acknowledge, of course, you know that Love is played by Chris Hemsworth's actual daughter. So it was kind of cool to see father and daughter enter into that fight scene at the end.
Was she really?
Yeah, did you? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's his.
I did not know that. That's cool.
Yeah, that's why Love had a very Australian accent for being the, you know, like.
Well, yeah, but.
Christian Bale. What?
Yeah, but it doesn't matter because it's not Christian Bale's daughter. It's but like he was using his Australian accent in the film.
At least it wasn't nearly as like overly Australian as. I mean, I guess it's just her voice. I mean, it's the Australian accent, so it's like how the kid's gonna talk. You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My
yeah,
kids sure. right now are trying to do for this, you know, this voice, this audio drama. I'm doing kind of a test run of it, and so I'm using my kids for some of the younger parts. And like, all right, try a Scottish accent. I'm like, nope, nope, nope. Just talk, you know, just talk. It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway. Yeah, no, that was his daughter. So it'd be remiss without pointing that out. It's kind of cool at the end of that. I think. Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah. The introduction of love as a construct or perhaps eternity as love is a potentially huge, powerful character that I would guess may come back in a Young Avengers type capacity. Maybe not as a member of the team, but perhaps somebody that they have to turn to. That could be really, really cool. So I'm excited for what that might set up in the future. I don't, as I've mentioned before, I don't think that we are going to get a Thor 5. I don't think we need a Thor 5. I think we needed this movie. I think this was definitely a needed movie. We needed kind of a good conclusion to Jane, and her character and a good send off there. You know, we didn't, oh gosh, I mean, there's so much to even like, we didn't really even get into, which is, for example, like the epic fight scene, like that was like so heavy metal where Thor gives his power to like all the kids.
Yeah, that was cool. That was super cool.
Those kids are going to be like so traumatized. I remember thinking afterwards, like with just their experience with gore alone, it's like these kids are going to need therapy. And then like Thor's like, I need more warriors and I got kids. I'm like, you know what? These kids are already scarred. Let's go ahead and like just, you know, have them like
no, that was their therapy.
Spider creatures.
That was their therapy for them. Like, you know, all these things that have been terrifying them. Now they have the power to like actually overcome them and destroy them.
Oh, so, yeah. The kids get to destroy the monsters in the closet. That's actually, you know, that's pretty cool, Belle.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
I liked the bunny with the laser eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. That was all. And like, kind of speaking of that, right? Like he grants them the power in a similar way that Odin grants, you know, in the first Thor movie.
Yes. The power.
And Mjolnir, back when they were dating, like, you know, he's sitting there talking to the hammer and doesn't even realize that he's doing another same kind of thing for Jane, right? And so that's why the hammer, you know, protects her, is because Thor told it to. And I don't know, I like those little neat nods. I thought that was really cool.
Well, and I think it shows that, you know, so I was thinking about how this all kind of plays in, right? And to me, that's kind of a showcasing of Thor having the Odin force, right? Like the power of his father, kind of the not necessarily like the specific like power set per se, but like the power of his father has been passed on to him, and the ability to kind of put those enchants, even not like without even intending to, in one very specific case, is kind of that showcase. Now, when that occurred, that was before Odin died, but at the same time, it was after Odin had like named Thor king, if I'm not mistaken. And so I think, that was such a cool idea. I love the way they did that. That was cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, cool. All right. Well, there you go. Out of five, man, what you giving this?
You know, I had a really fun time. I enjoyed it a lot. I think Ragnarok was a 5 for me. So I'm gonna go ahead and give this one a 4.
Yeah. I think that's pretty about right for me too. I very much enjoyed it. Like I said, there's some little gripey things here and there, but like for the most part, it was popcorn, good time at the movies, a fun kind of send off to Thor and his supporting cast. I thought it was fantastic. And also it did, while I would have loved to see more of a story for Valkyrie and kind of a further establishing what is the future of the MCU. To some extent, I think we may have gotten that in Love, but we'll see what ends up happening. So there you go. That's our thoughts on that. All right. I do want to talk about the broader MCU stuff just kind of briefly here. All right. You made mention of the fact that, you know, obviously nobody's talking about what's going on with the Eternals, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And we know that Disney did not showcase everything that was happening. Like when Feige kind of announced all the new titles at Comic-Con, there's a lot that's missing there, right? We like very specifically, we see dates for films with no names.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we know things
are probably D23 announcements. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So do you think we're going to even get an Eternals 2, or do you think that storyline is going to be picked up somewhere else?
You know, I don't know. Like when you mentioned Hercules and then him maybe being spun off into a series, like it kind of broke my brain, because I realized now that that's all these new series that we've gotten in Phase 4, like, that's kind of like an avenue for telling stories. Like, you know, Marvel is almost expecting their fan base and people who like the movies and stuff to watch all the shows. Because, I mean, there've been mentions of things that happen especially in Multiverse of Madness, right? Like, mm-hmm. if I feel like if you didn't watch WandaVision, you might be going in there going like, what the hell are these people talking about? Like, she has kids, but they're imaginary. Like, I don't know. And so that was kind of, you know, a new thing. And so, you know, thinking about stingers usually, indicating what the next movie is going to be might not be the case anymore. It could be that, you know, these are going to be storylines in shows or something like that. Maybe Hercules comes down and it joins the Thunderbolts or something like that. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I bet you're right. That makes a lot of sense. I, you know, he was a member of the Dark Avengers, so I could see him very much taking that Thor role in the Thunderbolts. That's a good catch, Bell. So we'll see what it ends up meaning overall. I think that I worry about the fatigue element, because you mentioned that at the beginning about maybe people are having some Marvel fatigue. And I think that's probably true in Phase 4 because it's been so disconnected. Whereas what was such an exciting part of the franchise was that it's all connected and it's all kind of coming to something. And this, even the parts of the, like, multiverse, you know, being introduced in the TVA, and then the multiverse being explored in What If, and then, you know, having Into the Spider-Verse, or rather, No Way Home, and then with Multiverse of Madness, all of these things happened, and all of these things deal with the concept of the multiverse, but they don't really feel fully connected. I feel like Loki wrote a check that nobody has been able to cash, right? Yeah. With He Who Remains. Like, everybody's like been going around like, oh, but don't forget, we got this other thing that's going on. Oh, we got a multiverse over here, a multiverse over there, multiverse over here. But, you know, like, they're all like talking about the multiverse and talking about incursions, but it's not really clear as to how it's all connected. And I suppose my hope is that Quantumania will be when we truly kind of get a chance to see, okay, now it's all connected and now we're kind of hitting the races again.
Yeah, we got a tiny little glimpse of it at the end of Multiverse of Madness when Charlize Theron's character is like, you just caused an incursion and we're going to go fix it. That was the first time we talked about incursions, right? And with Secret Wars coming up, like, something's got to give, something's got to connect, right? Because otherwise, if they're using the 2015 storyline for Secret Wars, you know, what are, like, you got to have some sort of connective tissue to really make that storyline work with these films. And so far there really hasn't been that. So yeah, my hope is that, you know, Quantumania is going to deal with that. We're going to have some multiversal stuff, or maybe we'll see the results of an incursion and like what happens. I've been rereading the 2015 Secret Wars storyline, to get an idea for it and sort of help like my brain plan out what they might be doing. And, that was a fun little comic arc if you haven't read it.
That's good. Well, I'm hoping that that'll like give everything like a shot in the arm for what's to come. I'm excited for when we get that trailer too. I was kind of hoping we'd have it by now, but apparently it's not ready.
The Quantumania trailer?
Yeah.
Well, and with all the news recently of VFX artists being basically crapped on constantly.
Right.
Yeah, like I think we're gonna see some delays and stuff, and rightfully so. The people working in visual effects shouldn't be treated as like second class citizens in the filmmaking industry, you know? Like,
no, and then on top of that, like, some people gotta like you just gotta like let your imagination carry the work, okay? Like, we all saw like the Rancor and knew it was made of clay. You know what I mean? Like, it's okay.
Like, nostalgia does a lot of, oh, I remember, like, I really, you know, you look at the practical effects, and yeah, like, practical effects are great. I love practical effects. But, you know, look at practical Yoda in episode one.
Yeah, exactly.
It was bad. Like, it was bad. It was not Frank Oz and Yoda from Empire Strikes Back. It was just not.
Right.
And so, you know, and yeah, like, I saw a bunch of, like, people were taking screen grabs of, there were two particular scenes, and saying, oh, look at the VFX, it's terrible, and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, those scenes comprised about 15, like, one of them was like a split second worth of film, and then one of them was maybe like, you know, 5-10 seconds. It was with Axel was talking to Thor, and it was just his head floating. And then there is when Thor is using the lightning bolt to like teleport away or whatever. And like the teleport away, when people like take screen grabs of this, like, oh, I can't believe this is a $200 million movie. And it's like, it was 1 second of screen time.
My goodness. Come on, y'all.
It was 1 second of screen time. And yeah, sure, with the head floating, like, it didn't look all that great, but who cares? Like, it's come on. It's a floating head. Like, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's not.
Like, there's microphones, like, heading, like, it's not just CGI. Like, you know, like, Pirates of the Caribbean. There's, like, a boom mic hovering over somebody's head at one point. You know, like, accidents happen. Your imagination can carry it. Look, I am not ready for y'all to, like, just absolutely just destroy She-Hulk, okay? Like, that movie, like, I'm really excited for that series. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I saw the original, the first trailer, too, and thought, yeah, that CGI is probably not ready yet. But I didn't, like, think, like, oh, I can't believe blah, 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 blah. And the reality is, even if it's not that much better, it was still pretty dang good. It didn't look like it was totally finished, but it was pretty dang good. And I'm not really, like, watching it for the CGI. We watch it for the stories and the characters and otherwise. So, yeah. Just be cool, just, people.
Yeah, and remember that the people doing this stuff, it's people. It's people making these things, and they're extremely overworked and they're extremely underpaid. And I do all the CG work for all the Marvel movies, and when you're making fun of it, you're making fun of me, and I don't appreciate that.
That's right. We never told you that before, but that's what's up. So
I've done every single visual effects shot in every single Marvel movie.
That's right. That's right.
It was all me.
He had to in the fight scenes. He was in charge of Thor's gut, and in game. Yep. Every single pixel, and that's a lot of pixels, y'all. So
that's a lot, and there's a lot of like motion cap, like I still have like little welts on my belly from all the motion capture little dots.
There you go.
Because the glue stuck into the hair and it pulled the hair out. It's just awful. It's awful.
Terrible.
Thor
Levinson. Right. That's our thoughts. We'd love to hear yours. Head over to Twitter. You can use the hashtag, I guess, TV Talk. Even though this is not a TV Talk, you use hashtag Panel to Screen. How about that? Use the hashtag Panel to Screen. Let us know your thoughts on Thor Love and Thunder. Really excited to see what happens from it. Hey, like I mentioned, this show, the support system for the show is changing, so we need your help to keep us going and growing. Head over to patreon.com/TV Talk, especially in the coming days. You know what? Actually, don't. How about this? Don't head over there. give us like a week, maybe next week. Head over there next week. That's what it is. Head over there next week. And I don't care if you listen to this a year in the future. Head over there next week. and there you go. That's what we're gonna do. We're gonna do it like that. So you can find out how you can support us there. Follow Bell at Ring That Bell. You can find all of our contact information and more at tvtalk.fm. That's gonna do it for us for today. But for me, for Bell, for Bell's mom.
Hi, mom.
Shazam!
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.